Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast.
Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back to another episode. I'm so glad you're with me. I'm so glad you took the time to check this out. Thanks for sending all your friends and family members to check this out, too. You're helping this podcast to grow, and I love that story. I think that's awesome. Today, we're going to talk about something that affects a lot of us, right? It's that place we get to. We're kind of grumpy or depressed, or we kind of live with a chip on our shoulder. We just can't find a sense of peace or happiness. And I have discovered that something causes that. And it's not what we usually think it is. And so the title of today's talk is called The Lie That Motivates Us. The Lie That Motivates Us. You see, countless people go through life grumpy, or they're depressed, or they just can't find happiness. They go around with a massive chip on their shoulder. Now, if you or someone you know seems to live perpetually on the edge of either blowing up or lashing out at others, then this post is for you. See, that internal disintegration is like a low-grade fever, and it heats up right below the surface of our lives. You know, that thing that's just constantly grating on us, it's deeper than what is in our purview. And in order to change it, we have to deconstruct some things. And so many people, attribute this malaise, this unhappiness, to being too busy, to their circumstances. Oh, I would be happy if it weren't for that person. I would be happy if it weren't for this situation, my job, my boss, my neighbor, my house, my debt, my whatever, right? And so people kind of feel like life has become like digging out of a hole that's in the sand. You see, you take one scoop out and everything kind of sloughs off the perimeter to fill in the void. And so if we live in this hole in the sand, we start to perceive that our efforts are fruitless. And it kind of introduces hopelessness into the equation. And even when you're being proactive and you're trying to change it, those efforts are diminished by life collapsing around us, right? You take two steps forward and then you get knocked off on your heels and you have to take another step back. It just seems like you can't win. You can't get ahead. There's no breaks coming your way. You'll never win the lotto. Now, this is that sense that we get. Is it any wonder that people who, and I'm talking a lot of people, most people live in this place. And most people, you know, will seek anything that will anesthetize them to this reality. Sure, drugs, alcohol, illicit relationships, working too much, power, control, anything that will take away that or distract us from this reality that is burdening us. And most of the solutions to the problem are really surface solutions. I mean, most only examine the realities and the burdens of our life. They say, well, you know, if the problem is your debt, then you need debt counseling. If the problem is your marriage, then you need marriage counseling. If a problem with something else, then you need correction or coaching or help in that area. And we just kind of stay focused on eradicating the symptoms, never getting to the root cause. And if along the way we determine that all of these things that make up our life are really binding obligations, meaning if you feel like your life is a have to and not a get to, then the solution for you is really to cope with those things you cannot change. Right? This is the mantra of our society. We've heard this over and over again. And I'm here to tell you that there's another way. But I'll tell you this also, that the masses, they don't follow it. And so this way that I'm proposing remains very counterintuitive. And it's hidden right in plain sight. It's not going to be new and revelatory to you. When I explain it to you, you might even just reject it. You see, below the surface of our discontent lies the motivations that created our circumstances, right? Every circumstance came on the heels of a choice, and every choice came on the heels of a motivation. And these motivations reveal how we got stuck, and they offer an unusual, constricted path to freedom. Matthew talks about that in chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. But like I said, be warned, when I reveal this to you, you'll likely just diminish it as powerless nonsense. And why would we do that? Why would we take something that has the potential to change everything and just throw it right under the bus? Well, the reason is that our ego, our pride, hates the option that I'm going to share with you. It prefers a miserable existence to liberation, right? It would rather be miserable than to be free. That's the way our pride works. You see, our lack of freedom produces a powerful sense of self-pity, which enables our pride to lash out and blame anyone and everything that isn't delivering us to satisfaction. It's our scorecard thinking that ensures that no one else suffers like we do. And thus we validate our identity as a martyr, and we parade it around like it was noble. The Hebrews call this a loss of shalom, or the absence of peace and well-being in the whole of life. This is the idea behind the living hell that I spoke about earlier on in the year when I did my discourse on hell. You see, we are all born to different circumstances. No one's really on the same level footing. Some of us are born into very dire circumstances, and some of us into optimal circumstances. And psychology tells us that our circumstances today are the result of yesterday's choices, or at least most of them. And that's true. I don't really disagree with that. But some circumstances you're simply born into. You have no choice over the matter. Now, I don't disagree with the fact that yesterday's choices become today's circumstances, which are really just our definition of what we call life. But we can go deeper. We can do better. You see, when we make a choice, its consequences germinate into what we call life. And making a good choice is all but impossible if we're not able to access the spiritual reality of the motivations beyond those choices. And you see, most people don't access it. They just don't. It's not that they can't. It's more that they won't. They don't see that thing beyond the thing, which really has more power than they realize. And so, as a result of people kind of skimming the surface, they are susceptible, we are all susceptible, to the most clever lie that I am aware of. And the most clever lie that I am aware of is that love obligates us. You see, we all buy into this on some level. I mean, it's a lie that preys upon our pride and our sense of duty. I mean, we believe this lie, and it puffs us up inside, and it makes us feel way better than we should, and it makes us feel better than others, because after all, we're the ones that are laying it down. We're the ones that are sucking it up. We're the first in, we're the last out, right? That is sacrifice. That's how we like to spin it. You see, this lie helps us do some wonderful things and some tremendous acts of goodness. But at the same time, it simultaneously creates a scorecard in the backdrop of our mind. A scorecard in the backdrop of our mind. Did you hear that? You see, it makes us into the worst kind of good people. We're the kind of good people, so to speak, who keep track of our efforts but fail to see how this cuts both ways. Its fruit is the fear of missing out, and that's FOMO is everywhere. And that is how you know you believe the lie. You see, you think you have to do that thing because it's the right thing to do. And so you feel like it's about duty. Now, can you see why people really resist the option I'm presenting? See, the truth is that obligation never motivates or is never motivated by love. Love does not obligate us. Love compels us. When you fall in love, it's not like you're obligated to like that person. You are absolutely compelled to like this person. Something about them just draws you in. You don't have to be obligated to go and write those first love notes or take them to dinner or go on a date or see a movie together. You're excited and pleased and desiring and motivated immensely by love to do that. You see, and when love is motivating us, service is not a burden. You write, you look at Mother Teresa and all that she gave away her whole life. Did she sacrifice? Yes. Was it a painful? No. If you ask her if it was a burden, she'll say no. Love compelled her. She could never have done those works out of obligation. You see, when love serves, freedom is not lost somewhere else. If you have a scorecard mentality and you're helping someone out, you're very mindful of what it's costing you in the backdrop. You see, love recognizes that everything belongs, and it easily reframes everything into goodness. You know, 1 Corinthians 13 talks about love, and in verse 3 it essentially says that love surrenders all the outcomes happily. Surrenders the outcome. That means you've let go of your agenda because you're just compelled to serve. Think about it. Marriages, parenting, caregiving, your vocation, your ministry, your charity. All of these things become drudgery when obligation replaces the compulsion that initiated every single one of those. The job you hate today was the job you loved and wanted and desired at some point. The marriage that you are so frustrated and unhappy in is the person that you loved and willfully gave yourself to at some point. Parenting, we think of ourselves as so loving and giving, but deep down we realize sometimes we're not doing it out of love, are we? You see, I warned you that you wouldn't like this. And the reason that we reject this is because we can immediately recognize all of the implications of the truth. I mean, it's painful to realize that we do very little out of love, if this is the measurement. And especially when we consider those for whom loving should come easy, our children, our family, our parents, our siblings, our neighbors. We should easily love them, and yet we don't. We do good, sure, but out of obligation. It stings to discover our good isn't that good. And that is hurtful to the pride. And that's why the pride hates the motivation of love. It much more prefers duty. Now, digging out of all this, finding that place of happiness and contentment despite circumstances, it's actually really easy, and it's also very hard at the same time. It's easy in that it's not complicated. It's hard in that you'll have to do soul work. You see, we're not just accountable for what we do. We're accountable for why we do it. Good deeds are just as poisonous to the soul as bad deeds. And most of us don't see that. And so we do a life of obligatory good deeds, and we wonder why we're miserable. You're miserable for the same reason that the person who's done a life of bad deeds is miserable, because you failed to find love. You see, we have to stay with this process of self-criticism and exploration. That's the spiritual path. This is the path of all spirituality at its highest level. So let's ask ourselves why we do anything. And if the motivation is love, then we will be compelled to do it and surrender the outcomes, whatever they may be, and we'll live gratefully for those outcomes. If the motivation is anything other than love, then we will never know peace. Oh, sure, you can puff yourself up with pride and feel darn proud about who you are. You can pat yourself on the back and say what a good soul you are and feel like an upstanding citizen and all of those things. But those good deeds, they don't come from a good place. And yes, while God can use those good deeds, I assure you those are deeds he knows nothing about. Just check out Matthew 7, verse 21. Now, what I would invite you to do is to exchange the lie of obligation for the truth of compulsion. And once you do, everything, and I mean everything, is going to change.
Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.